Hi everybody, welcome to season 4, episode 20 of The Hard Truth Inside the Football Injury Podcast with me, Philip Heidson, and Darren McCampany, chairman and owner of Peterborough United. And it's been a week or so, but a couple of games since we last connected, and
Rome is burning.
Not some good results here. I think everyone's saying the wheels are falling off now, and I'm sure that it goes from one extreme to the other, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Since we last talked, you lost 2-1 away at Exeter, 5-2 at Wickham, and then you had the match called off yesterday against Port Vale.
Yeah, so we had about 7 days on the football field. So we spoke about Wigan last week. You know, again, game we should have won comfortably. I think they had 4 shots, we had 26. We went to Exeter. I thought we were very good against Exeter. We had another, I think across Exeter and Wigan, we had 56 shots. So we played Exeter. Miles the better team. 1-0 up. Young Ware then obviously gets sent off for the second yellow card in the second half, and you could see it coming. I guess my only narc about the whole thing would be, we probably should have hooked him earlier, but my manager's admitted to that. So again, no salacious headlines, by the way. For anyone listening to this, Swanee, I don't want salacious headlines. I don't want vote of confidence. Chairman digs out the manager. Chairman's having a go at the players. I'm not doing that in this episode. I won't do that this season. I said I wouldn't do that. I'm riding it all the way to the end. I love the team I've got. I love the squad I've got of players. I love my staff to bits. I'm absolutely all in, fucking regardless of bad 7 days or whatever. I give a fuck. So that's really clear and important for everyone to know. We then obviously went down to 10 men. You know, they had 2 shots. They scored from 2 chances. Again, we had chances to win the game, even with 10 men. And you come away and you go, okay, you've had 2 bad results and you've had 50 shots. And you've had 6 shots against you in those 2 games. So, you know, and it's one of them where I spoke to the manager. He was on the bus at like 2 a.m. or whatever. And it's just like, listen, this happens. Like, you know, in the summer, we were never going to be a mid-table team, like people said, or relegated. And we were never going to win a league title by January when we started playing well. And that's where people like can get carried away and people can be a little bit too critical. For me, it was never going to be one or the other. We knew, you know, as a whole, I'm going to use the word process. There was a whole thing we were doing this season. We were going to change our style, our identity, our recruitment. Lots of stuff at the football club we were going to do. Academy involved. Everything right through. You know, you go through to our 21s, to our 18s, to our 16s or 15s. They play the same formation, same style. Our players have been thought to mirror Efron Mason-Clark, to mirror Poku, to mirror Randall, to mirror the pressing striker. The central midfielders in our academy are mirroring how we play in the middle of the park. And possession from the back deep in our own box. So everything's been mirrored. And that's, you know, we laid the flag down. We're playing that way. So, you know, it's a case up to the manager. Look, it's happened. Then obviously Tommy Efron, obviously, you know, was struggling. Mm-hmm. You know, we didn't have any wingers. And then kind of when I knew on Friday, the way we were setting up on Saturday, I kind of didn't want to watch the game. It was kind of like, it's like Back to the Future. In comes the target man. You know, formation change. I there was part of me wasn't going to watch on Saturday. It was almost like, this is like the one team that, you know, they seem to have our number regardless. And, you know, I sensed something wasn't good, wasn't going to happen on Saturday. I even said to Barry, don't go to the game, you know, kind of thing, you know. And as per whatever else, it wasn't us. It wasn't us. And the only message I have to the manager, the coaches, the players is just be us. Just be us. Like, no matter what, no matter you lose, whatever, no baby out with a bat water, just be us. We've got the best front four in the EFL, in my opinion. And when they play together, I think they've been beaten once, and that was the first time they ever played together against Portsmouth away. And then the next 20-odd games they played together, we've not been beaten. Like, if we can keep our players fit and our front four can play, we'll win 90% of our games. You know, that's, you know, as long as they're fit. So Saturday was just bad in all ways. And by the way, we're 3-0 down. And yeah, the young goalkeeper for the last 3 goals had a nightmare, but you still conceded 2 shitty goals earlier, which wasn't the goalkeeper's fault. And you're thinking to yourself, okay, let's get away from this 3 at the back crap and playing with wing, but let's just go back to what we are, 4-2-3-1. And the manager did it in around the 60th minute, and we scored 2 quick goals. And to be fair, Malik came on and played in Efron's position. David pushed up to what would be Poku's position. We took Clark Harris off. Ricky played as the pressing 9. and suddenly we scored two quick goals and we could have got a third. And suddenly they were wavering. And you're like, okay, this is us. This is us. And I love this team. They never die. You know, like 3-0 down, fuck it. You know, 68th minute, we're 3-2. We got 30 minutes left. We're going to fucking win this game. And they get like an innocuous corner. And the corner goes over. And to be fair to our goalie, I'd rather any goalkeeper we have come for a ball. And if they make a mistake, live with that mistake. Because at least they'd come. Rather than stand on their fucking line.
You want to command your box as much as you can.
Right, he's come. Correct. He's come for it. And I think Vokes has just come on. And to be fair to our goalie, I blame the defender more than the goalie. Because even though the goalie's missed it, from the angle it's at, we have a defender there. And I can't remember who it was. But they shouldn't be letting Vokes fucking get ahead on that. You know, you've got to be all over them and whatever. And they score. And it's just like, it's a gut punch. And then at that point, that momentum is gone. And then they score two shit goals from two mistakes that we've made from, you know, I'm not going to criticize the goalie. You know, he was fabulous against Exeter. He's made a, you know, he's just had a bad second half, you know, against Wickham. And it's exasperated. And, you know, this is a goalie who had 10 clean sheets in 19 odd league games before he got injured. And then we brought another goalie in and whatever else. So we know what we have in Nick. And I fully support Nick. And you know, because a young goalie is going to make mistakes. Anyway, so it was just a bad day at the office. And the manager knew when I spoke to him, you know, he's just like, you can't say three bad defeats in 7 days. Because that's not correct. You know what I mean? We should have beaten Wigan. We should have beaten Exeter. And then we were just awful against fucking Wickham for periods of the game. And, you know, and by the way, the two best wingers in the league weren't playing either. You know, Efron wasn't playing, you know, and then Ricky's playing suddenly with a target man and it just didn't look right. And it just, I hated that. I hated going back to that. You know, I don't pick the team. You know, people sometimes think I pick the team. I don't pick the team. I let my coaches and managers, management staff get on with it because I fully trust them. But I won't say they get it right or get it wrong, but they're not perfect either. We're all human beings. And it was just a bad 7 days. And you know, and worse is that Wickham did it to us. So, you know, you pick your arse up. I know on Sunday, I think it was the players all got together. I don't think they need, you know, motivational videos and to get together. We've had a fabulous season. We've had a shit 7 days. So, you know, it is what it is. They, you know, the good news is now Efron's fit. Kwame Pocker's now fit. You know, I think last night for that game, there were a few changes because players were tired. But now, in hindsight, actually, they're all fully fit, you know, touch wood, for Saturday. You'd like to see our front four get a run together again. The last time they played together was Charlton, and we fucking destroyed Charlton and won 2-1. So, you know, God willing, they all stay fit for the run-in. Because if they stay fit for the run-in, we've got a great chance. You know, and that was always going to, like, be the thing in the summer. When we drew it up and designed it, we were like, we can afford wages for this really strong 13 players, 14 players. And then we have to fill gaps with some younger players and maybe some loan players and players from the academy. Because unfortunately, with financial fair play and the income we receive, on, and again, not a slight on fans, if I drew a picture for you and said I'm allowed to spend 5 million on wages or whatever else to keep your Efrons, to keep your Pockus, to keep the Rams, keep players like Josh Knight, these players are earning good money, really good money by League One standards. But unfortunately, I can't get a like-for-like for Efron if Efron's not fit to come in on the same wages because I can't make it work in the cap. I just can't do it. You know, it's not physically possible to do that, you know, particularly with the drag over from the experienced players that moved on and we were still paying some salaries or contracts until a certain point in time. So I'm trying to make it design it all up at once. And people are like, well, sign that player. There mightn't be half the player Pocku is or half the player Efron is. So it's trying to make them, can we get them to 60, 70% and they can fill in when needed and you can scratch out wins and you can do what you got to do. And that's always the challenge, you know what I mean, with a squad, you know. So particularly with higher wages from the championship coming down, you know, that won't be as bad in the summer because you'll have, you know, Jando will go in the summer most likely, mm-hmm. You know, and you know, he's not cheap. You'll have a couple of others and you're not going to have those 4.5-5 grand.
And you have more younger ones coming in who are on lower.
Right. Salaries. Yes. To give a little bit of insight, if it's League One per se, and we're hoping it's Plan A and it's a champ, but say it's League One, if you lose it's 4.5 grand or 5 grand a week and you can go, right, okay, I can get a really top quality player on 3 and I can get a backup on 2 who will be at 70%. Do you know what I mean? As opposed to I've got a really good player on 5, but the backup's on maybe 1,500. And they're a player that's not quite ready yet, or not, you know. But they'll help. But maybe when the chips are down, they won't help as much. And so I'm not throwing players under the bus. That's just trying to work out the dynamics of getting everything into the squad. So that's hurt us, you know. Obviously, last night the game not being on, we were gutted. We wanted the game on. You know, you want to play games and whatever else. But look, the rain came down. Everyone knows our pitches have problems, you know, this year. And we had a ref come in and it was just like, listen, it's unplayable right now. You know, it rained all fucking day. It was sunny up until then. And then just I got a phone call at 5 o'clock UK time going, fuck, it's rained all day. The forecast is rain till 10 o'clock tonight. Even if we start the game, this will be just a fucking nightmare. And worse than that, we've got a lot of work into the pitch over the last 10 days. Now you're going to completely, it'll be fucking destroyed. Even if by some miracle you got 45 minutes out of the game, you know, and whatever else, it's just going to be. And people are having to go to pitches and whatever else. And just to give a bit of background and insight into that, you know, we, the company that we 5 years ago spent a lot of money on pitch at the main stadium, the training ground. It was a special design pitch. I want to say mixed-o pitch. So they were like high six-figure pitches. The company we use maintained them, whatever else. For whatever reason, they dropped out of the maintenance business a few months ago. We still had time left on the contract. They kind of left it to it. You know, the pitch was running its cycle, its five-year cycle or whatever it might be. We knew at the end of the season we would have to replace, but we didn't think we'd give up on us fucking halfway through the season. We brought in a new company, and I don't want them getting any criticism. They only came on board late December. You know, it was around the Oxford game, which pretty much when we lost the pitch is when this new company came on board, who basically have come in and gone, look, we'll take everything over. We've got the equipment. We've got this. We've got that. We're working with them on next season and what we have. But, you know, the reality is we're going to have to spend a lot of money on getting it. And we're probably going to try and go the Deso route if we can make the numbers work for the main stadium. And we're probably going to have to do another pitch at the training ground because we'd spent a lot of money on two pitches at the training ground. And one of them is probably not fit for purpose either because the weather has been so fucking extreme. So we have spent this budget cash year, 12 months, from last July until the end of June coming up, more money than ever we've ever spent on pitches. And we've had the worst season for pitches. So this isn't a criticism that's allowed on the football club because we have invested and spent the money. We even spent extra money in August, September, and October and another pitch at the training ground. We've spent a tremendous amount of money. It's just been a fucking unmitigated disaster again. And we have to go down a different route. It's probably going to be the Deso route, which is a bit longer than 5 years, I think, but it's going to be a lot more money if we can get a deal over time because we ain't got the money to do it in one go. And this goes back to where I argue about it would be great if the EFL put a fund together, you know, that basically teams could borrow from in patches and then pay out of their TV money over 5 years so that you got better pitches throughout the EFL. So say the EFL put 20 million together and let's say a new pitch is 500 grand, 600 grand. I don't know what the price is going to be. Every season, you're not going to have all 72 clubs, particularly in League One and League Two, I would do this for. You're not going to have 40 clubs needing a new pitch every year. It would be every other third year. Yeah. So you probably have to do maybe 10, 12 a year, which is probably 5, 6, 7 million quid would need to be loaned. You could charge interest on it. The clubs will pay it back out of their money. And then you would have clubs who would have good, you know, and these are the little things that I wish we could do.
When I put my procurement hat on, surely there could be a EFL-wide deal with a provider or a couple of providers where you're pooling all that money together and suddenly it's not a $500,000 or $600,000 project, it's a $300,000 or a $400,000 project or whatever.
Sterling. It ain't dollars, by the way. It's fucking sterling.
I've been in the States for too long. So
EFL go on and they go, we're gonna advertise this brand. This brand's gonna be a sponsor. And part of the sponsorship is we're gonna do a deal and we're gonna buy in bulk X amount of pitches because we can see League One, League Two per se, because they get a lot less money than the champ. We can see over the next 2 years, Bradford, Peterborough, Swindon, those, we'll do a little survey. They're all going to need new pitches. So we're going to have 15 next year, 12 the following year, and in year three, we're going to have these and so on and so on and so on. We're going to do a deal with this company, get them for a cheaper price, and we, the EFL, are going to pay the tab, and then we're going to take it out of your TV money, and we're going to charge you 5% so we can make it a profitable enterprise. But it gives everyone that capability because not all League One and League Two clubs can just whack out 5, 6, whatever.
It's a lot of money for
new pitches. It's a massive amount of money.
And what I've certainly seen from Brad, because we struggle mightily, you know, with the pitch. And it's a lot about the drainage and under soil and around the sun and the elevation of the stands and where the sun sets and what gets. There's so many different variables that go into,
100%.
You know, the quality of the pitch or not and how to maintain that pitch.
We've spent so much money on bulbs this year to dry it and patches to do it and whatever. So look, the key for us now is it needs to be rolled. It needs to be flattened. Because the other thing as well is we play a certain style. And when the ball's bouncing and there's certain issues with the pitch, it doesn't help. So what we really desperately need at our ground, just till the end of the season, because not a lot can be done, is a lot of sun. We need a lot of sun. So the only positive, I'm hoping this is a positive, is I think we have 9 home games and we have 6 away. And I'm hoping the mass majority of those home games are going to be in March and April when the sun's out. You know, the pitch isn't getting hammered so much. You know, you get a chance to get a bit of work into it, and it'll help play our best football. And we're playing those teams, obviously, with tired legs at home. So that's something that you're hoping that comes off. And then I'm working on right now, a big thing this week been sent to me, a presentation of 4 different options for what we're doing for the pitch next season. So, again, not a financial thing. We're doing what we can do, you know, whatever. And the other thing I'd say as well is there are people going on about, like, not having a right back is why we lost 3 league. Biggest load of bollocks. If you have 56 shots in 2 games, how's it about having a right fucking back, by the way?
those 2 games, the numbers are with you. So you know that by the law of averages, you carry on doing that for the rest of the season, you'll be fine. And then
You're winning games.
You just learn from the mistakes.
Wickham was just a low point. Wickham was, we lost our heads, you know what I mean? Like start to finish, you know, it wasn't us. It wasn't the way we like to play. You know, like I said to you, we're playing with a target, man. It wasn't us. It's not what we want to do. And it's like flag in the sand. We can't keep going back to that. We have to just move on now. And yet, you know, and we had fans screaming out for that during the week after the 2 losses. Bring in the double goal and do this, do it. It's not a slight on him, but we've moved on. Like, you know, it's not how we play. And to be fair, we had young Pemmy make his debut from the 21s and, you know, our academy, and he was great for 5 minutes. You know, we've got a lot of good things happening. We can't keep looking backwards. You know, we can't obsess about right backs and whatever. Jadal's done a great job. God bless him. He's had a couple of games with Kwame Poku, and we won all those games. Kwame gets injured. Then he gets David, who's come in. David hasn't been at his best, but David's honest, and he works really hard. You know what I mean? But he's probably more of an impact player at the moment, the way we play. And then we've got a Brentford boy who's come in. God bless him. He's 19. He's had a game, you know, half a game, I think, was against Wigan. Done okay. Then he's obviously had a bit of a disaster against Exeter. God bless him. He's going to learn. That's all part of being on loan. You know, and Jadel's playing behind this. And he's had no fluidity. He's had a couple of games with Kwame, won them. And okay, get Kwame back fit. Kwame was playing last night. You know, that was the beauty. But I guess now, with the game off, it gave Kwame and Efron a few more days to rest their bones. You know, that kind of thing. So it is what it is. Look, we know who we are. We know what we are. We just need to be us. And we'll be okay. We'll do really well. You know, we've got a lot of games coming up, and they're going to be fast and furious, do you know what I mean, back to back. And this young group, they're not like previous groups. There is no quitting them. Even against Wickham, you'd say, well, you quit. No, we didn't quit. We were 3-2 down, and then there were 3 errors that just fucking knocked the shit out of us. But we still didn't quit in an alien formation for the way we've been playing most of the season. And you know, there was no quitting those players. They're not like that. They're not like previous groups. So, you know, the majority of fans are with them. But there's always that little click. You just, any chance now of a bad run or a blip, we're just going to stick the knife in and we're going to do this. And it's this. And we didn't recruit well. And we had a shit transfer window. No, we kept every player. We had a great transfer window. The biggest thing about the transfer window wasn't what you were signing, it's what you were keeping. Mm-hmm. So don't want to hear that. We didn't sign a right back. We've got a right back. And we also have a young right back who's fucking phenomenal, by the way, and won't be with us very long. But we brought in a new right back today. So, you know, a boy who's got a bit of pedigree, but it's not worked from various places. So it's a bit of a punt. We've given him a chance at the end of the season. Let's see. But again, that wasn't a panic deal. That was something that's been in for 10 days. The manager's been working on that one. And I approved it about 5 days ago. So he's going to play with our 21s and get fit.
Vontae Daly-Campbell.
Yes, correct.
He's been training with you, hasn't he, for a week or two?
Yes, he's been training with us for a week. You know, we spoke to Josh. We spoke to some of our players in Nolan. You know, he's had a bit of a stigma attached to him where he's previously been. He's been at Arsenal, he's been at Leicester. Brendan Rodgers loved him at Leicester. He left there, he went to Cardiff. You know, he's 22. You think with that amount of clubs, you know, whatever. But look, that's down to the player now. What we can only do is give someone an opportunity. So that player is probably looking in the mirror going, how many more opportunities do I get? So sometimes they have to go backwards to go forward. So, you know, the manager likes him. There's a player in there. He's not fit at the moment as regards to the intensity that we play. Couple of 21 games and he'd be good to go. So we just felt it was an add-on that maybe would help us. And you know what? If he does really well, then we'll look at something bigger, because obviously next season we will need to sign a permanent right back to compete with James Donnelly. So this gives this lad a few months to settle in and prove that he deserves, you know, a bit more of a longer term thing. So we were okay about that. We were open. We had the space to do it in the end. We had a couple of young ones go out on loan, which freed up the wages for us to do it in the cap. I think Charlie went to Kidderminster and young Gabe went to Peterborough Sports. So the minute we had that cap space, we could do something. Do you know what I mean? So we'll see how it goes. But everyone needs to, like, just relax. It's like, you know, I hate people say blip or people say this, whatever else. I'm okay. Like, I'm okay. I'm loving what we're doing.
Yeah, you didn't turn into a bad team in a week, did you?
No. You know, a week ago we were getting applauded. But I was never like, we're Man City of League One. Like, let's calm down. I saw some of our fans arguing with other clubs going, we're playing it. And I'm happy they can do that. But sometimes I think you got to be careful, you know, because you don't go a whole season unbeaten for like 7 months in League One usually, you know. We've got a lot of big teams. You know, people last night were going on about we're done now and automatic promotion's gone and da-da-da-da-da. No, you're wrong. There's 15 games to go. The chase is on. So I don't even table watch. But all I know is we get back winning, we get back to being us. I know with 4 or 5 games to go, we're going to be there. Mm-hmm. So they're the things we have to do.
I remember last time you got promoted, you had a spell around about this time. I think it was
Shrewsbury.
And maybe there was a couple of other games that you had, and all of a sudden it was,
everyone does,
you know, what's going to happen. And
everyone does.
You know, it's just one of the certainties of football is where there's highs, there will be lows.
Every promotion season I've had, every promotion season, you've had just like, you know, a few bad games or a sticky patch or, you know, it just happens in football. It's very rare a team just dominates from start to finish. It's very rare you get like, I think it's Mansfield, who, you know, lose 2 games in 40 fucking games, you know. But Mansfield could argue they've been building to this for the last 2 seasons with the previous disappointments. So, you know, Plymouth, I remember a few years ago, were up there and then they, you know, fell away. But then they came back with a fucking, you know, vengeance the following year to win the league. So just sometimes it's just the way it is. And this is nothing to do with age. Trust me, you know, you go and stand in our dressing room, you talk to these young lads and whatever else. This isn't about, they don't fear anybody, you know. But the thing is, they're not always going to be perfect. And, you know, shit happens. It goes against you. You play Wigan, they score fucking 3 goals and 4 chances, you know. So we have to clean up certain stuff. You know, Exeter, the red card, the little things. And we just have to clean up. We clean up and we keep having 25 chances a game. We win a lot of those 15 games left. You know, so here's what it is. You know, we've got Blackpool this week. We've got Blackpool on Tuesday. You know, you got, you know, people will be like, season defining. It's not season defining. You know, at the end of the day, there's a long way to go. You know, and this isn't like previous years, you know. It's a group I enjoy watching.
When you've got the same team in close proximity, I think it's Saturday and Tuesday for you, Blackpool at home in the league, Blackpool away in the EFL Trophy semi-final. Does it change the way you prepare, like for the first of those 2 games? Because you don't want to necessarily give a hand or...
No, I think our manager will play his strongest team on Saturday, as will they. And I think probably, even though you're one step from Wembley, because the amount of games in proximity now, if we don't get to make 4 or 5 changes in a game, you know, and people are going to get tired. You know, a lot of our game is based on, you know, possession and pace and power and whatever. And you just can't do that like every 72 hours, you know what I mean, at that level. So, I couldn't tell you what a manager will do on Tuesday, you know what I mean? At the end, I would imagine he'll probably make changes, you know. So I don't think Saturday will affect what he'll do on Tuesday. Win, lose, draw, I think he'd probably like mix and match a bit, you know what I mean? So I don't know, you know, but there's a lot of games coming. So we all have a chance. We both have a chance of going to Wembley. Let's see what happens. Do you know what I mean? And you know, it's fun. And that was always the target at the end of the season. So you're 1 game from your target. It would be great to get there, but it won't be life-changing if you don't. So, no. you know.
And this is the first time we've ever got to the semi-finals of in whatever incarnation this competition has been. So and we've got Wickham. So no easy game. So, you know, you could end up having a Wickham Peterborough EFL Trophy final at this rate.
Yeah, I obviously they're our bogey team, but at Wembley, I think it would be different. But I think you'd do okay against Wickham because of styles. Styles will probably match each other in a good way. And I just think, look, you know, give me Wickham 3 weeks ago after Charlton with a fully fit team, we don't lose 5-2 at Wickham. So, you know, and that's no slight on Wickham. You know, at the end of the day, they beat us fair and square on Saturday. And, you know, we made a lot of mistakes and it just made it look worse, you know. So here's what it is, you know. I mean, I don't want to talk about them anymore. So do your best against them anyway.
Yeah.
We'll do our best. So anyway, enough about Peterborough, enough about, you know, whatever else, because I'm, you know, again, like I said to you, I've been like this all season, you know what I mean? It's like win, lose, or draw. You know, people want to panic, people want to do whatever else. We're a really good team. And just, I've been saying this, you know, we're about to start selling season tickets. If you like what you see, this is what we're going to do for the next few years. You know, we're going to go through a really good cycle. And yeah, you'll always lose players and bring, but we're going to go through a cycle where your identity is really clean and clear. is going to be a style you're going to like, and we're not going to move on that. You know, we moved on a little bit against Wickham, but I don't think you're going to see that happen again. We're going this way. We'll probably get younger. So, yeah, it's like, get on board with it. Hopefully, the pitch will be like Wembley next year for it. So, yeah, that's just the way it goes. So, let's talk Brantford, because obviously you've had a couple of exciting results. So let's go back to, obviously, you know, right back to after the last podcast. Give me the juice.
Yeah, isn't it funny that, you know, we've got a couple of wins under our belt as you go through a couple of defeats. It's, we seem to be very opposite of each other this season. A
couple of big wins.
But yeah, so we beat Wrexham 1-0 on Saturday at the racecourse. And that was, you know, pretty unexpected. Wrexham.
How many people have beaten them at the racecourse?
I think it was their second defeat of the season. And the first defeat of the, well, we actually beat them in the League Cup, in the first round of the League Cup.
Oh, no.
There as well. Yeah. But in the league, they lost to MK Dons and Graham Alexander on the first day of the season. And that's their only other home defeat.
That's right. You're their bogey team. So you've gone. So did you deserve to win that game, or did you just stay in the game until late in the game and then frustrate them and then nick it?
The latter. You know, we stayed in it. Defense was strong. We didn't really look like we were going to score. And then 5 minutes from the end, we got a penalty. And you think, okay, you know, we kind of got lucky. We got a penalty here. Penalty was saved. And you think, well, you know, crap, that was our chance. And then 5 minutes later, really out of nowhere, Andy Cook popped up and 1-0, and you know, it was a bit of a smash and grab.
Cookie!
Yeah. And it was the first time since November 2021 at home that they hadn't scored, which is 51 games.
Wow. Wow.
So, wow. And, you know, and I think there was, it shows a difference in expectations. There was a lot of pressure on Phil Parkinson. It was the first time he'd lost four in a row. Oof. And people are already calling for his head.
But they lost four in a row.
Yeah, they won at the one yesterday, but it was the fourth defeat in a row against us.
Jesus, wow.
So we came away from there, you know, unexpectedly with a win. And then we had MK Dons yesterday, and MK Dons is probably the team that has that's played the best against us all season. We played them at their place. I know it's October time frame, and I can't remember if it was 3-0 or it was 4-0, but it should have been 10-0.
Is one of
those, yeah, it was just one of those, and we beat them 4-0 last night. We had so 28%.
How did you do that?
Yeah, we did it with 28% possession. So it was basically, I think, you know, strong at the back, disciplined, pressing. You know, we didn't really give them much time when they had the ball. You know, they kept the ball for most of the game, but they didn't really get much chance to do much with it. And for once in a while, we took our chances. I think we had six shots and scored four, which, you know, previously we've been doing all right on the shots, we just haven't been converting them. So it was one of those games where it all kind of came together, and, you know, you're kind of questioning yourself, like, who kidnapped the real Bradford City and replaced it with these players? It was one of those. But maybe that's the start of a run, you know, with Wrexham and with MK Dons, two very difficult games.
You're 4 points from the playoffs.
And that's crazy. I know we've played a game or two more than others around us, but points on the board, I wouldn't have thought that a week ago, you know, when we're looking below us rather than above us.
So what's changed?
Maybe it just needed a bit of luck and a bit of a spark and a bit of belief that we got from Wrexham. I think that they've really shored up at the back. So we've been pretty strong defensively. And honestly, you know, you look back at the run, we hadn't won in eight before Wrexham, or maybe it was even nine in the league. There was a lot of draws, a lot of 0-0, a lot of 1-1 draws. So I think the problem...
Defensively strong. Defensively strong.
It's not like we've been losing every week. We just haven't been winning. So far too many draws that could have, should have been converted to wins, and we just couldn't do that. So maybe a bit of luck. Like I say, a little bit of belief. I think Kevin McDonald has come back into the middle after he had some time out when he became caretaker manager. And he's had some time out, you know, to get his fitness back. And while he's not a 90 minutes a game player from a fitness perspective, you know, he's a class above.
He's class.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's class.
And he can just run the game.
Orchestrator.
Exactly. So, and then, you know, when you need the quality pass, he's got the quality pass that a lot of the others don't. So it's been interesting kind of seeing him and Richie Smallwood together, almost like Richie Smallwood needed somebody else alongside him who could be the partner in crime, rather than Richie Smallwood thinking that the whole world is on his shoulders and trying to dictate everything in the middle. I think maybe that's helped a little bit.
Oh, this is good news because you keep this up, you got season ticket sales on the horizon. So it's great timing, really. Well, for
we definitely need that because, you know, we talked, I forget the game, where there was probably 7,000 or 8,000, it looked like there. I'd say that there was maybe 10,000 there just by looking at the footage yesterday.
You hit seventh, you get in seventh place, and suddenly you're going to be getting 17, 18, 19,000 again.
Yeah.
So it'll awaken the natives. They'll be all like, we're back.
It's interesting with iFall because there's a lot of people that I know who are season ticket holders, but that are paying to stay at home and watch it on iFollow because it's cold, it's been miserable, the football's not been great. And it's like, you don't want to miss it. And so it's actually, from a revenue perspective for the club, probably a good thing because they're getting the revenue twice. You're getting the season ticket money and you're getting the iFollow money.
Yeah.
But I do think that iFollow has an effect on midweek attendances, especially when you're not playing very well.
Yeah. No, I get that. I mean, we're about to start selling season tickets. Chris came to me with his, you know, Chris runs all that now with his presentation on it, whatever. And I said, look, this is your decision. If you think that's the right way, to, you know, a few changes here and there, meet with supporters groups, which they did, explain to them, go through the process. Will everyone be happy? No. Will most people be happy? Yes. You know, for the football that's on display, I still think it's good value. We haven't really put them up a lot price-wise. You know, a lot of people still have, we had like a three-year freeze after COVID because of the lack of refunds on original, you know, whatever. This is the final year of that, you know, and yeah, we feel like, you know, we're doing right by the fans. So, you know, I think we'll do well from it, you know, and I'm sure. Who have you got your next few games? You've got obviously Tuesday night, you've got obviously, or Wednesday night, you've got obviously got Wickham, but who have you got Saturday?
So this is the most Bradford City banana skin that you can possibly have after two great wins is Sutton at home. So Sutton at home on Saturday. Okay. Then we got the Wickham game and then we got Barrow away the Saturday after.
Okay. So yeah, listen, if your players are now turning the corner and winning is infectious, you know, hopefully that'll, you know, listen, we need the Bradford posh win doubles. That's what we need. We need that to happen all the way through. We need a week where we'll be very excited, you know, about the potentials of Wembley and the Hard Truth final.
Well, it would be nice if we could take some momentum into that Wickham game. Because if we got momentum into that Wickham game, then anything's possible.
Yeah, I actually see them, you know, I think cup games are just different from the league, and particularly when you're one game from the final, regardless whether you win 10-0 on Saturday, whatever else, you know, you just, it's a one-off game. You know, it's like the winner goes through to the final and then you're like, you're there. You're at Wembley, so it'd be really interesting to see. So let's see. We need the old posh win double.
How much is the EFL Trophy final worth financially?
It's really funny because the last round you got 40 grand. You only get 50 grand for winning the next round. Right. And then I think the prize money is like 90 grand or something like that for the final. And then you obviously split the gate after the FA or the EFL take their split. So, you know, we have bonuses in our players' contracts. So really, there's not really a lot of net money for the club. Where we'll do well will be you sell some shirts, you sell whatever else. But the lion's share, the majority, you win that cup. You're better off losing the cup final because you actually make more money.
Yeah,
because you don't pay by the time bonuses. You paid your bonuses out. Not that I would, you know, endorse that. I would rather basically make nothing out of it and get the trophy. So, but yeah, the reality is, you know, you can in theory winning that cup, everything else in it, going through all the rounds. You know, you're talking 500-600 grand. That's not to be sniffed at, you know, for League One and League Two clubs. It's why I always laugh when people slag the cup off. It's actually a lucrative cup. You know, Coventry won it when they got relegated to League Two a few years ago, you know, and they would have made probably more than that because of the crowd size. So, you know, it's a great trophy. So anyone would be proud to win it.
It's a new pitch.
It is a new pitch. You're absolutely right, but I still have to put that fucking thing in anyway. So, you know, it's like, yeah, you know, more things to add to the outgoing column course-wise, you know what I mean? So it is what it is, but all good.
Let's go around the leagues a little bit.
Sure.
So starting in the Premier League, I don't think we can avoid talking about West Ham and Arsenal. So West Ham obviously lost 6-0 at Arsenal, and a lot of discontent, which feels from a distance unfair, I think, at West Ham. I mean, they're eighth.
Yeah, I think Moyes has done tremendous, and I think, you know, there's obviously no new contract on the horizon. And I think some fans, you've got to be careful what you wish for. And I think this happened last time, Ned Moyes. He comfortably kept them in the Premier League. He went and then they struggled. And, you know, he's won a European trophy. They're still in a European trophy. You know, they've had a semi-decent season. I mean, what are your expectations, I guess, you know, if you're the owners of West Ham? Top 6, top 7? You've got clubs now that suddenly are Brighton are like a, you know, a force in the Premier League. You've got clubs like that, you know, outside of your Spurs, Uniteds, Arsenals, Liverpool, Chelsea were coming good again, like I said they would. It's very difficult to compete and get into that top bracket. And, you know, the one thing I'll say about West Ham and Moyes and whatever else, they've never had a prolific number nine. They've never had a 20-season goal scorer. You know, for example, put Ivan Toney in the David Moyes team at West Ham. I think they'd probably be vying for top four in the Premier League. So, because they've got a lot of other good pieces around and they've built a good squad. So, I don't know where it stands with their fans, why they're so disillusioned and there's such outcry. Look, losing 6-0 to anyone's never a good thing. Ask Harrogate fans after Mansfield beat them 9-2. So, you know, the reality is it's that should never happen. Maybe Arsenal were just too good. Maybe West Ham just had a really off day. But Moyes is a really experienced manager. I think they'll still have a good, strong finish to the season. I wouldn't discount them from fucking going deep. I think they're in Europe still. You know, so he definitely won't be short of a job offer in the summer. He's done a really good job there. And I'd be very, very surprised if they don't keep him, because I don't, you know, who would West Ham go and get?
Right, who's going to take them to the next level?
Well, yeah, I mean, that's the question. I mean, like, Liverpool have got that conundrum in the summer, you know. And, you know, who are you getting? I just don't know, you know what I mean? Like, you know, your Ange Postecoglous aren't available. So, I don't know. So, look, their owners, they've got their own way of dealing with that, and they will in time, I guess.
That middle of the Premier League table is an interesting kind of place to be as a football club, isn't it? Because you're probably there because there are just gulfs financially between making it any further. But there's not necessarily a lot to celebrate as a football. Like, I always wonder what motivates you as a supporter of a middle of the road Premier League team, where, you know, maybe the motivation is, let's see if we can win a cup this year. But it's not necessarily, yeah, you know, you're not really going to get relegated. You're not really going to go into the top four.
Yeah.
So, you know, what's the it goes back to what you said about what's the expectations.
I didn't even mention Aston Villa, Newcastle. I mean, yeah, you know, those clubs now are like owned by some of the richest people in the world. So, you know, you add Villa, Newcastle to Spurs, and then your usual top four or five big clubs, and Chelsea are on their way back. You know, what does a Brighton and a West Ham set out to do every year now? Right. You know, what are they? What's the goals here? Look, let's just finish top eight. If you finish top eight, that's pretty good and the best league in the world. So I don't know, you know. Does Moyes' face not fit with their fans? But if you say to their fans every year, you're going to finish top eight, you're going to go deep in Europe or a cup, is that enough for them? I don't know what the expectations are. I know they play now in one of the biggest stadiums in the Premier League. They're not short of a dollar. I know their owner likes to get value for money, because obviously I've dealt with them trying to buy Ronnie Edwards. But I don't know, you know, so at the end of the day. But, you know, I've always liked West Ham, you know, and I just think, yeah, Moyes and the staff, I just think they do a great job every time. You know, is he a fashionable manager? Probably not. But that doesn't mean he's not a great manager. Same you would say about Sean Dyche, you know, and, you know, take the points away that Everton have been deducted, and he's a fucking good manager. So, you know, what else in the Premier League? Man City, 10 points clear yet? They will be soon.
I was going to bring up Everton, but of course they played Man City away, and so you can't really blame them for losing that, because that puts them back into the bottom three. And they haven't won, at least I can only see the last five games based on what I'm looking at, but they haven't won in five. So they're struggling again.
They'll come good again.
And so who's going? So we got Sheffield United on 13 points. We got Burnley on 13 points, who Liverpool beats. Who's going to be the third relegated team this year, if you had to put some money on it right now?
Hopefully not Luton, but I think it might be Luton.
Yeah.
That was a blow losing to Sheffield United the other day. That was a bad one, you know, because Luton have been really good at home.
And those are the ones you've got to win.
Yeah, they're the ones they got to win. And because I like, you know, the people who run Luton, I love Mick Harford. I want them to stay up, but I haven't looked at their fixtures. I haven't looked at the running. I don't know how many at home, away, or whatever else, but I think Dyche and Everton will come strong again. I think they might win some of the points back if they're appealing that decision. I you know, who else is down there struggling? Who else is just outside of that? The one I worried about was Palace.
Yeah, Forest on 21 points and then Palace 24.
Yeah. Forest could be the one, you know, get dragged in, but I'm not sure they will get dragged in. Look, you know, I hope Luton win the next few games as long as I'm not playing Liverpool. But, you know, it's an interesting one. I think Burnley and Sheffield United are gone. So, you know, really, it's that one spot, which again just shows how bloody difficult and competitive that league is. You know, and the three to come up are the three that could go down, right?
Well, as the gap gets wider.
Yeah, unfortunately. What about the champ? I believe Southampton lost for the first time since the Old King died.
Yeah, first in 25, I think it was. They lost last night against Bristol City. Leeds continue their run of form, so Leeds moved up into second now on 66 points. So it looks like it's Leeds-Southampton, and Ipswich are 6 points off the pace, so I think that they're still within a couple of wins and a couple of others stumbling of being in there. But I think it looks like between those four for the top two.
Yeah, I mean, Leicester have come good again, and they seem to now just put the afterburners on, haven't they? So they're going to fly away with it. So, yeah, it's going to be an interesting run in there. Who else is in the West Brom are still doing well. Fair play to their manager with all the crap going on.
They're 8 points behind Ipswich and 14 behind Leeds. So maybe a little bit too much of a gap to make up there.
Yeah. And then who's going down from the Championship?
Well, at the moment, you've got Rotherham on 19, Sheffield Wednesday on 26, QPR on 29, Huddersfield on 31, Stoke 32, Millwall 33, Birmingham 35. So again, Rotherham, it looks pretty difficult. 12 points already adrift. Sheffield Wednesday, unless they can get one of these miracle runs at the end of the season put together, it's going to be tough. And then it's really, you look at it, it can be anywhere from 15th down for that last spot.
Okay, so it makes it interesting for the running. So let's not talk about League One. So yeah, it's not that much fun to talk about.
Well, in the Championship, we had John Dahl Thomason leaving Blackburn, which I think has been on the cards for a week or two. But interesting that John Eustace came in, which I think is good for. We talked about him being a good manager when Birmingham let him go.
It's a good move, but it's a real change in style because Dahl Thomason played a real style of football, whereas Eustace isn't quite into that style. So he'll definitely keep them safe. I think John Dahl had said in the summer they'd pull the strings financially from what they wanted to do. So, but look, owners have problems. They pay their bills. So I know Blackburn owners will get a lot of flack. But at the end of the day, they did good business in the window. They sold a young player. You fill the gap. You run itself. It's a well-run club, but they're just, But listen, Sammy's flying in the goal scoring charts. I'm hoping.
Yeah, they still have the top scorer.
If Ireland don't cap him in the next international fucking thing, everyone in the Irish football team needs to be lined up and fucking, slapped in the face. So he needs to get his cap. And there's no doubt he'll be in team of the year and hopefully he'll win the Golden Boot. So at least that's one positive. I'm delighted for him.
It's interesting because, you see the scores and you see Adam Armstrong. It looks like he scores every week. But Sammy's got one more still than Adam Armstrong at Southampton so far, which shows what a good season he's had.
Incredible. Incredible. He's maturing. He's turned into a top, top Championship player. Fair play to the kid. It's a great message to everyone out there. When you start a bit lower down and you get a move, it doesn't work, and then you come back lower down to Peterborough and then you go again. So fair play to him. He's done that himself. And yes, of course, Thomason and people around him have helped, but he's done that himself. He's he's Mr. Reliable for Blackburn. And, he's hopefully he'll get a good multi-million pound move in the summer.
And
into League Two.
Well, touching on League One very briefly, second week in a row that we can talk about Darren Moore. We talked about him, leaving Huddersfield.
He's gone to Port Vale.
Yeah. It was interesting, I think both interesting and probably irrelevant, to see that he was given a contract to 2029.
Yeah, that's a long-term deal. Fair play to him getting a chance after Huddersfield. He's obviously shown he's a good League One manager. He's won promotion. Huddersfield, for whatever reason, didn't work out. And I touched upon this, that, he deserved to get the sack. But he's a good manager. He did well at Doncaster. He did well at Sheffield Wednesday. And he'll do well at Port Vale. Hopefully not against us, but he'll do well.
And I read a letter from the owners at Port Vale to the fans, basically backing up their football infrastructure and, telling fans to lay off a little bit. Like, this is the way we're going to do things. These are the reasons why we do the things that we are. Again, a little bit of trust the process, I think. But, just don't be overly critical of... I know that results on the field aren't going the way that we want them to, but we're not just suddenly going to throw out the baby with the bathwater and start.
I'm glad they did that because it's good to be transparent when things aren't going well, just as well, you're transparent if things are going well. And I just think, that's important. And I think Carol and the people in Port Vale, they're good owners. It's the first little bump they've had and, they've had a bit of a shitty run, but, it's a good club. It's well run. And sometimes you need to say to the fans, look, we'll still show up. We'll still pay the bills. we still want to do it this way. And, you know, if this way doesn't work, okay, fine. You can come at us, you know, with the pitchforks and the criticism and the vitriol and the toxicity and whatever that goes. We've seen it with me over the years. Do you know what I mean? It's like, you know, you're winning promotions, you're a hero for 2 minutes, you're getting relegated, you're the villain. You know, you're getting a club with smaller gates, always veering for promotion. You know, you should be doing this better and doing that better, you know, whatever else. But sometimes, like, fans need to look around and go, there's a million football clubs that would love to be in your position. A million football clubs. They're always in with a chance. Always in with a chance. So, look, fans pay their money. You know, it's very difficult to tell fans not to criticise, but you can't. At the end of the day, a fan's going to buy their ticket. It's freedom of speech. You are allowed to criticise a football team. You do you. I don't want to hear it personally, but you do you. If you want to criticise players, you want to have a pop, you want to do whatever, you're within your right to do that. Try not to get personal. Try and take a player's age into account, because I just think the younger generation now aren't built like we were 25 years ago. If I was a 22-year-old rugby player, and I was a good rugby player, and I was getting it, whatever else, and give a fuck, it would drive me on. But that's me 25 years ago. It's different. If I was brought up in this environment, I was 25 nowadays, at 22, I might think differently. Just people are made differently now. It's just different. It's like managing. You manage, Mourinho managed players 20 years ago. He could say certain things. He could do certain things. He had leaders. He does those things 20 years later. He's not the same manager. It's times have changed.
He seems a bully.
Right. He's not a bully, but he seems a bully because that's what everyone goes to. So just times change. You know, I brought my kids up different where, you know, they're not like that. You know, if somebody criticizes my children, they're going to be fine, because I brought them up to be a little bit harder. So, you know, maybe parents out there need to do a little bit of the same, but, you know, each to their own. You know, I just want my kids to know this is the real world. And I also know what they're going up against, that they should win every week, because these youngsters just aren't built the same. And I just think nowadays, stay off social media. They talk about mental health and everything else. You know, win, lose, or draw, fucking just, if you're going to go on it for a win, you've got to be able to take it when you lose, you know, or just stay off it. Like, you're a professional athlete. You don't fucking need it, you know, whatever else. Like, you know, I go on social media. You know, at the end of the day, I know what's out there. And to be fair to our fans, they weren't, even after the Wickham trouncing, they weren't that bad. You know what I mean? Like, you know, I get messages off fans all the time, and they weren't that bad.
But I think, you know, you enjoy the crack of that as well, sometimes, the interaction and, you know, everything that comes with it. So you get energy from that in some way. Whereas, you know, a 19-year-old kid who, at the end of the day, even though they're a footballer, they're probably not earning a ton of money as a footballer. They're still, it's not like, you know, their life has been made because they've got their first professional contract and they're getting all this abuse from everybody.
Correct. I laugh. Like, I've got a guy all the time, Tommy, his name is. You know, 2 years ago, he was coming at me on social media going, it's time for you to go and hand over to Jason and Randy. That was his great big advice. Now he's at me because he works in grass and lawn care. Pay whatever they want, this pitch maintenance company. Pay them whatever they want. Yeah, because we're like, you know, we're the Saudi Arabian League One company.
Money's
pay whatever people want. Pay them whatever they want, because, like, you know, he's running a million businesses. And it's always like a demand. Do this, do that, do whatever else. It's like, fuck off. I don't work for anybody. Stop telling me what to do. Stop telling me how to suck fucking eggs. Yeah, with all due respect, back in your box. Okay? However, that's your prerogative. You want to keep coming at me with shit and whatever else. If I come back at you and put you in your fucking box, expect it. Sometimes I'll be like, I just laugh and I'm just like, fucking. Now, the beauty as well with Twitter, you can take yourself out of a conversation. Yeah. So when somebody comes at you with stuff and you're constantly looped in while 15 people argue, you can go, do you know what? I'll press this button and I'll come out of it. This is fucking just filling up my timeline. I've got bigger shit going on. You know what I mean? So it's like fucking, you know, everything that's happened to me over the last 2.5 years has taught me there's bigger stuff going on than a bad pitch or a bad result or whatever else. You know what I mean? And my only focus is my club doing better, growing in every possible way and fixing issues, mistakes, problems. But unfortunately, you can't do them all in the day, Philip. You know, it does take time, you know? So what else we got? We got any questions? We got any good stuff?
Well, we got briefly in League Two, we touched on earlier about Mansfield and putting nine past Harrogate.
Dem and Stockport are really going, aren't they, at it? And then you got Crewe, who got third place over Wrexham.
Yeah, Stockport lost at home to Crewe yesterday. So there's only 1 point in it with Mansfield and Stockport. But that 9-2, I think I saw Swanee may have just tweeted something beforehand saying that the last nine goals in the EFL was posh. back in the '90s? In the late '90s against Barnet, was it?
No, fuck that. What's he talking about? I'm pretty sure under me we beat Brentford 9-1.
Yeah.
And we also beat Accrington Stanley 8-2. But I'm pretty sure we beat Brentford 9-1 under me. So I'm not sure he's right about that.
Right, well, whether, history books on that one. So I was going to ask you, what was the largest win that you had?
Terry Butcher was the manager of Brentford, and we beat them 8-9-1. And then we obviously did Accrington 8-2. We've had some like big scores. You know, I think a couple of years ago we did Accrington Stanley 7-0. You know, and don't be surprised if you see some of those scores. I'd like to see that happen again, you know, because I like the goals. But yeah, I mean, that was like, listen, the top of League Two is fascinating because I still think Wrexham will get up as regards to automatic.
I mean,
I'm not sure they're going to win the title by 10 points anymore, but I still think they'll get up. But if for some reason Wrexham ended up falling into the playoffs, fucking hell, those playoffs are going to be like, I mean, ESPN and The Athletic are going to like, there'll be a jizz fest everywhere. If they end up in the playoffs, like, oh, Wrexham on TV, do you know what I mean? It's going to be like, can you imagine? It's going to be like Sky will be like, fuck League One playoffs, fuck the Championship playoffs. We've got the Hollywood superstars on TV. It'd be just like, you know, Jesus Christ, I can only imagine. So that one Wrexham fan's going to love me saying that. He's going to be like, oh, here you go again. I just do it to wind him up.
We'll give Salford a bye as well to get into them as well. And it'll be a match.
To be fair, like Salford are the jilted girlfriend now, Sky. They're kind of like, you're done. We got the hot new shag in town. Like you're fucking yesterday's news. There ain't no going back to you, by the way, no matter how well Carl Robinson's done there. But, you know, yeah, it'd be really fascinating. I mean, I still think Wrexham will go top three. But if Crewe and Stockport and Mansfield end up beating Wrexham and Notts County to automatic promotion, fantastic.
That's a heck of a performance. I mean, you look at the team and it's ridiculous, really, for League Two. You know, when we played them at the weekend, when you've got Jack Marriott coming on as a sub, you've got Ollie Palmer that wasn't even in wasn't even on the bench. Fletcher up front. You got Mullin, who really should be a League One Championship player, but...
But you're just saying that it's like Dad's fucking army, isn't it, about some of the players?
Yeah, there is that for sure. It's certainly not a sprightly bunch, but...
Sure. But they're experienced. Listen, Ollie Lee, I mean, they've got some fucking very, very good players. I mean, like you said, they're Mullin as well. Like, even at 29-30, he's far too... But at the end of the day, look, you can say they go out and sign all the best players, but listen, they've done some good business. You know, I think Marriott was only a couple of hundred grand. Great signing for League Two. They actually rang my manager to get a reference on Jack. And obviously, you know, the gaffer gave Jack a glowing reference. So, you know, again, yeah, I mean, look, he was a very good signing. I still think they should have signed Clark Harris, because I think when you've got Palmer and you've got Fletcher who are like going up in years, you know, you want the next best in class. Do you know what I mean? Like for a target man, because that's what he likes to play with. But no, they've got some very, very good players there at Wrexham. So, like I said to you, I still think in the run-in, the heat of the battle, the squeaky arse time, you know, it'll be interesting to see how your Crewes, you know, your Mansfield, Stockport spent a lot of money, haven't they? Like they're well stocked.
I think they've got like $4.5 million deficit, or something like that. I read.
Yeah. Well, they've got a rich owner, so they can afford to do that. So. Yeah, some good teams. So interesting. Notts County are still trying to hang in there, aren't they, as well?
Yeah,
so.
They've struggled since they lost the manager. Although I think they will say it's not just because they lost the manager, that maybe they were starting to run out of a little bit of gas before he left.
Yeah, it can happen. But still a big club. I mean, Notts County is a very big club. So it'd be really, really interesting. You know what I mean? So that's going to be a fascinating league to watch in the running.
Yeah, I mean, you look at the points difference. There's
it's like nine clubs. Yeah. Right down to 15th, I saw this. Yep. It was like 4 or 5 points separated by nine teams.
Just all much of a muchness. And because there's not really been, you know, there'll be a team that comes into form here and then, but everyone truly has been beating everybody this season. So I think it's still
I agree.
It's open season. I agree. There's still a third of the season left to go.
I think outside that, Accrington and Stanley to make a run late.
Mm-hmm. What is it about Accrington?
Experienced manager. Being there, done that. Not a nice place to go to. Style of football, you know, physical team. You think 15 games to go, don't write them off. If they got hot and they catch on fire, I think they beat Wimbledon last night, they had a good win. You know, so yeah, Accrington there, I think 4 or 5 points out of it. It's just that's the team you don't want to be playing. You know, and fair play to their staff and everything that's going on off the pitch with their manager and his contract and this, that, whatever else. So wouldn't surprise me to see them gate crash at all.
All right. Well, it's going to be an interesting few weeks. Let's see if we have, as I shuffle paper around, some questions. Let's see. We have Peter on email has said, Darren has been the manager for the majority of your time as owner. Is the first managerial hire that you made? He thinks, if his memory is right. And he's asking, what is it specifically about Darren that has made him successful and made the relationship with you so successful?
He's a top manager. Top. Even when he was younger, top manager. Wants to play a certain way. Loves scoring goals. Has a style of football. Over the years, it's got easier because you know each other's idiosyncrasies. You know, good and bad habits. You know what makes you tick. You know, after a loss, you can talk things out. It doesn't become heated. He's got the package. And what I love about him is he's open to staff changes. I don't know if people know this, but he's won promotion with multiple different number twos. A lot of managers always have the same number two. And I think what that tells you is you can give a lot of credit to a number two, and what that tells you about Darren is it doesn't matter who his number two is. He's still a good manager and a good coach. And as he's got older and more experienced than now, I'm teaching him more the other side of the game, the financial aspects of it, the cash flow, the budget, the this, can we do this? Can we do that? Can we do whatever else? Do you know what I mean? And, talking through those honest things where it's like, I want to give you this, but I can't give you this. And, getting more involved, like he's been more involved the last couple of months with the pitch companies, the whole infrastructure of a club, I'd love him, I don't want someone else stealing him. I want him to do well, but I even said to him, buy 1% of the club, become a director of the club. I'd love things like that to happen because I don't think he's ever going to leave the area. I think him and his wife are very settled. And I just think, I'd love to give him one big run, a run to get to the champ, to really shut up the doubters, to keep a club our size, doing really well in the champ and pulling off, serious underdog stuff. And I just think he deserves it for the career he's had, because 5 promotions, cup wins, great win ratio, regardless. He's a top manager. He'll definitely go in the EFL Hall of Fame if you talk EFL managers and what he's achieved.
Yeah, with promotions.
Yeah, absolutely. And he doesn't get the credit. And then you add all the players that have been sold for millions of pounds that have come under him. Again, doesn't get the credit, So I'm always going to beat the drum. I'm always going to be his biggest fan, bar when we play Wickham. I just think he's very underrated. And I think it's just always about, he's shit in the championship. And so, no, Peterborough shit in the championship.
Yeah, you don't have the resources though, to compete.
Yes, it's very difficult. So we've got to do it a completely different way. And it's just unfair. Like, give him, half of the clubs Gary Monk managed. Give him a couple of the clubs Lee Johnson managed. We're talking some big clubs, And these are managers that haven't won anything I've just mentioned. So give him those. And see what he'd do. So, listen, ideally he'd stay with us forever. He probably won't. I think this year has given him a real renaissance about what we're doing and the excitement of what we're doing. And even now, I'm working today on plan A, plan B, next summer, recruitment, contracts, people out of contract. If they don't sign, we've got to replace, we've got to do this, we've got to find the new Efron. We've got to, we're selling Ronnie, we'll find the new Ronnie. All those little things, and it gets exciting, And it's like you're starting to piece together what you want to do. So, and he's pretty calm, even like the 3 losses, Whatever else, he's like, he's been here so many times. He's got really good people around him. So what makes him different to everyone else? He's a grown-up. A lot of other managers come in, they fucking lie about how they want to play. They lie about that they're going to do it the club way, and then they go a different way. They fucking don't take criticism well. Managers can be fucking babies sometimes. And, in a modern world, you have to have a collaboration with the people who actually own things and pay the bills. And, if there's a director of football and there's a youth academy, you have to have collaboration. You go and speak to our academy director. You go and speak to anyone in the academy away from the first team. And they will say the collaboration between our staff and their staff is like, blah, blah. So that's really important. So, yeah.
You talked about getting him more involved in the financial side of the club and an understanding of all the financial side. And I'm reminded when you say that about, the tales you would tell of Steve Evans, who just wanted another 10 players, every transfer window. How many managers really care about the constraints within or understand about the constraints within which you're operating or are always trying to, I remind you like a kid who always is never quite happy and always wants something else and always wants the next thing.
It's difficult because I think a lot of managers don't have the comfort, say Darren does, where he's got my respect, he's got my patience, he's got time, he's not under immense amount of pressure. You know, whereas a lot of new managers are like, Jesus, you lose three in a row, you lose whatever, you know, everyone's at you and did it. So in respect to that, I would give new managers, you know, who come in and it's their first gig or second gig, the benefit of the doubt that they're not fucking interested in cash flow. They're not interested in balance sheets. All they're interested in is, can I have another player to help me win? Can I do this? Can I do that? Whatever. So football's a bit fucking stupid like that, you know, where people get 9 months in a job, 6 months in a job. And, you know, what I'm trying to do is I want my manager involved top to bottom. Like, this is how we operate. This is what we do. And if we're going to paint this picture, how do I get the paints? How do I get the ingredients? Can I afford the top paint? Can I afford that? And we're limited to what we can do. But you know what? If the product's really good and our gates go from 7 to 9, that might give you an extra 300 grand next year. And that might get you an extra 2 players to help your squad be better. And by the way, if I sell that player and we develop him and sell him, you're going to benefit. I'm going to make sure that happens. But also, we're going to take money from there to go and do new pitches in the academy, which where your players are coming from. I'm going to give you this for the first team, and I'm going to this for the facilities. And I'm explaining the whole process, like top to bottom. I'm going to say to them, like, I've got debts. Like I told him when I was doing this deal, and I was buying back the club, and you know, charting to come in for him. And all he wanted to know was, are you going to be the majority owner? Are you going to be the driving force? And I'm like, absolutely. And I've got these debts, and this is like, he, you know, when I turned down the Efron deal where I could have made an extra 700 odd grand from letting him go there. And then, you know, even though we're not in a good place financially, debt-wise and whatever, you know, he understood if I had to do it, I had to do it. Because he's always known from day one, look, I want to drag this number down. I want to bring this down. You know what I mean? I want to make us a really, really well-run club. I want to make us, I want to have money in the bank. I want to have assets all over the pitch. I want to have like crowds growing, all that stuff I want to do. It's not going to happen in a month. But here's the road to doing it. Here's what we might have to do. He knows. So, and I think as long as you make your manager aware and get them involved in that process and look after him and his staff, like make sure they're paid well, make sure they all have good packages. Do you know what I mean? That they'll all buy into it. And if they all buy into it, fantastic.
Well, I think it's the difference between long-term versus short-term. So what I mean by that absolutely. Is Darren knows that if he desires, you know, the likelihood is that he can be around for a long time and build something over a long period of time, you know, with you, and he sees the big picture. Whereas, you know, a manager who's coming in who's just results based and is afraid that he's going to get sacked if he loses 5 on the spin doesn't really care about that, because all they care about is, you know, what the next 3 months look like and how can they make sure they have job security.
Win 5 on a spin, lose 3 on a spin, whatever else, it doesn't matter. That's what we're doing. We're sticking to that, you know. And the other thing I'd say as well is that he'd be one of the best paid managers in the league, and rightly so. So I'm not worried about somebody in League One stealing him, unless it's a Derby County with 40,000 fans. You know what I mean? Like whatever else. And Charlton's a bigger club than us, but I didn't worry about losing them to them because I didn't think it was like a Derby County. It wasn't a Sunderland. It wasn't, you know, that kind of thing. And you know, I just think transparency and honesty is best with all of them. And I sat all my staff down in the summer and, you know, my sports science staff, my physio, we need this and we need this. I'm like, I can't give you all of that, but I can give you this as best I can. And if we sell a player, I'll get you an extra tool or whatever else. But don't worry, you're well looked after. And I'm going to make sure you got bonuses. And I'm going to make sure. And, you know, sometimes when you give your staff that comfort and that openness, they're not coming to work worrying every day. But they also know is like, drive us on. The more we win, the more players we produce and sell, I'm going to make your life better. I'm going to give you better tools around you. I'm going to make your life better coming to work and when you go home. Mm-hmm. So they're all the things you want to like work on. Do you know what I mean? So yeah. I think we're all pretty much together on that.
Yeah, everyone's in it together, essentially.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And my staff know I've got their back. Like, stick to what we're doing. I've got your back. Don't stick to what we're doing. I'm only joking.
Don't make the same mistakes twice.
Yeah, exactly. That's it. Just go to work and prove our players, stick to what you're doing, put out a pretty product, try and win games, let's try and score goals, let's try and sell a couple of players every year to fucking offset losses and make sure we can get better facilities and fucking get better and more players. Let's do things as simple as we can, as best we can. We won't always get it right, but if we give ourselves a chance, fucking great. That's what we want. That's what a Peterborough United with 7,000-8,000 crowds gets, do you know what I mean? The best way to be run. If you get me 9,000 and 10,000 crowds, I might run it a little bit differently. Do you know what I mean? So, but we're growing there as well. So, you know, lots of good things happening. So what we need now is a posh Bradford's on the run till May. That's what we need.
Well, one of us will if that's the case, one of us will have to lose at the EFL final.
No, because you lose on penalties, as you're still unbeaten.
There you go,
game,
draw. Perfect. I'm not sure if either of our hats will take that.
Mate, I fucking I'll tell you right now. Ah, oh, dearie me.
Well, let's leave it there for this week, and let's come back after the semi-finals next week. So
Yeah. Let's do that. Exactly. Yeah, Thursday next week or whatever else. So let's do it then. So, you know, let's hope we get everything we deserve. And, you know, in football, you like to think that majority of the time you do things the right way, you get what you deserve. So let's do this.
Create your own luck.
Correct.
All right. Well, thanks a lot, everybody, for joining us today. Just a reminder as well, if you're listening to this through your podcast app, you can actually watch all the episodes on YouTube as well. They usually go live on YouTube a couple of days after the main podcast goes live. But Henry did want me to throw that out there and mention it. Of course, keep those questions coming. We'll ask as many as we can when we can. And until next week, we will speak to you all soon.
Take care, everyone.
Thanks, everyone.